Hi, my name is Christina Phillips. I'm one of the producers for The Exchange, and when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic, one thing I noticed right away when I was screening calls is that as people became more isolated, a lot of people were reaching out because they were desperate for resources. For example, during one of our early shows on unemployment, a woman called me and said, "I don't want to be on the air right now. I just don't know how to reach the Employment Security Office. Could you please give me their phone number? I don't have internet, and I heard your phone number on the radio, so I called you." And what is great is that in that moment, as the call screener, I was able to give her that information in real time, and I get the chance to talk to all kinds of listeners and take what I hear from them and bring that back to our team. So when we're planning shows, we can use that information to know what kind of coverage is best for you. We know it's a difficult time financially for so many people, but if you can, consider becoming a sustaining member or making a one-time gift to NHPR to help support The Exchange and this work that we're doing. You can donate by going to nhpr.org, and there you'll find all of our coronavirus coverage in one place. Again, that's nhpr.org, and thanks.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The coronavirus has created uncertainty in so many aspects of our lives, including this year's elections. The questions loom large. How will cities and towns handle the expected increase in absentee ballots? How will local elections officials keep voters and poll workers safe? And what about voter registration? Usually done in person, but municipal offices are largely closed for now. Today in The Exchange, we found out what preparations are being made. And Exchange listeners, let's hear from you. What are your concerns or questions about voting this year? Email us at exchange@nhpr.org or give us a call. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are NHPR's Casey McDermott. She's done extensive coverage of voting in New Hampshire. Also, Brad Cook, longtime chair of the state's Ballot Law Commission. Also, chair of the new Select Committee on Emergency Election Support. And State Senator Melanie Levick. She represents District 12 in the Southern Tier. She's chair of the Senate Election Law and Municipal Affairs Committee. Later in the hour, we're going to hear from the town moderator in Conway, which did drive-through voting in its local elections yesterday. Welcome to all of you. Casey, I want to start with you. Just remind us, please, Casey, what issues were being discussed and debated around this year's elections, even before the pandemic hit?
Well, you know, as you know, Laura, because we've had conversations about election policy many times in the last few years, there have been ongoing debates around, how to balance accessibility with, ensuring kind of fairness and integrity in the state's elections. There's also questions about kind of the registration process and how many steps someone should have to go through in order to prove that they're eligible to vote in New Hampshire. That's been the subject of debates, not just at the State House, but also in the courts here in New Hampshire over the last few years. There have also been other conversations about things like election security, things like kind of technology or moving the state ahead in some of those areas. And what's been interesting to watch around some of the conversations that state leaders and local leaders are having around the response to the coronavirus pandemic is the extent to which there are a lot of overlapping themes, where the question of how to balance, opening up access to voting to all eligible voters with, putting in kind of measures to ensure that people are doing that fairly and correctly. Questions about the amount of work or the amount of labor that is placed on local election officials, who really are the ones that kind of run elections all across the state in New Hampshire and make sure that those go smoothly. Those are all questions that are very much coming to the front of the conversations that people are now having about COVID.
Senator Levick, how about you? You're chair of the Election Law Committee, as I said, in the Senate. What were you keeping an eye on, again, before mid-March?
Well, Laura, first of all, thank you for having me. We have been focusing on modernizing our voter registration processes. And we worked on Senate Bill 7, which is for a secure, modern, and accurate registration technology. It's basically automated voter registration through the DMV. Many states are doing this now. But we've also worked on Senate Bill 631, which is online voter registration. I've visited several states with other election officials, like moderators, supervisors of the checklist, to see how this is done. And Vermont is one state that does a tremendous job of online voter registration. But again, it's anyone who has a driver's license. It's virtually through the DMV or working in partnership with the DMV. But also Senate Bill 695, which is to join something called ERIC. It's a electronic registration interstate group that is member only. So there were 30 members, 30 states that shared voter lists, and now there's 35 because 5 more states just joined on. But this is also very secure technology. It's encrypted. And I believe that this is the way that we should be moving to make it more accessible for people to vote, for people who may be working, they may be in school, they may not be able to get to the town clerk's office, even to do a simple change. It would be such an advantage to have these systems in place.
Wow, and we'll definitely talk about some of the details of those, Senator Levesque, as the show progresses. But I am just curious, sounds like you were working on a lot of bills regarding elections before the pandemic hit. How are state senators like you conducting their business now?
Well, currently we have caucus meetings, so we're meeting on another platform. We are using Zoom, but we're planning on using another platform to actually start our hearings. We're hoping to do that in June. We are working with our constituents daily, getting updates from the governor's various task forces as well. So we're very busy working, and thank goodness for this technology that is allowing us to do our work.
Well, and Brad Cook, you're chair of this new committee that I mentioned, the new Select Committee on Emergency Election Support. So please tell us, Brad, what is the function of this committee? And just as important, what isn't the function? Because I think there's been some confusion about what you guys are supposed to do.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you for having me, too. The committee was named by Secretary of State William Gardner on, I think, the 27th of April. And what he said when he announced it was, the committee will advise the Department of State on the use of $3.2 million in Federal CARES Act money, which has already been received by the state. In the CARES Act, there was money to help states deal with the effect on elections, and the Secretary of State applied for and received the $3.2 million. Unfortunately, you can't just do that in a vacuum, and so our committee, which is made up of 6 people who were selected by the secretary, have been conducting hearings by Zoom to get the input of many people so we can understand what the issues are, what the categories of election issues that are usually handled face-to-face have to be dealt with some other way, usually by mail. And it's like peeling back an onion. Every time you get one layer of issues, then you find another layer, and you realize the political calendar and all of the things involved include changing parties, which have to be done by June 2nd, by people already registered in a party, to filing for office, to registering to vote, to requesting absentee ballots, to casting absentee ballots, and then, of course, going to the polls for those who want to, and doing it safely and securely at the same time that poll workers can be assured that they're safe so that they'll show up to do their job. So it's kind of a lot.
It's a very large onion, Brad, that you're describing.
It's getting smaller because the layers are getting peeled back. But your question about isn't our function is just as important, because there are literally hundreds of people who are very involved in elections, which is very encouraging, but they want to inform us about all the changes they think ought to be made in the law. And because of the timing, and because, as you noted, the legislature is not in session, and even if it were in session, were it to pass new laws now that had to be implemented within the political calendar that goes through the summer and to the September and November elections, that would be a lot of work. So it is not our job to change the law. We have to operate within the existing law, and to the extent that it can, some of the things can be changed or waived, either by executive order or otherwise, that's what we're looking into.
Well, and Brad, what kind of costs are we talking about? $3 million under the CARES Act. That's what New Hampshire got from the feds to help with any sort of coronavirus-related concerns around elections. What are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know, masks and gloves and sanitizer, or what else, Brad?
Oh, I think we're talking about the cost of printing and processing 5 to 10 times as many absentee ballots. We're talking about perhaps additional staff that'll be needed to do that. We're talking about proposals for prepaid postage so that everybody has access to these things. We're talking about publicity. We're talking about the PPE, personal protective equipment. So I think we're talking about a lot more than $3.2 million. Blessedly, there are other sources of money that the state has received. The state is stockpiling, as I understand it, PPE equipment, and I know the Secretary of State's talking to the Department of Safety about how much of that might be available, and then there are other funds that have been received in connection with elections. But right now, we're trying to figure out what we want to do and what it's going to cost so that we can give that advice to the Secretary of State.
Well, and you mentioned absentee ballots, and Brad, to you first, but I want to hear from everybody. Why are elections officials anticipating such high numbers of absentee ballots this year?
Well, to the extent, first of all, our absentee ballot statute is in the law. It sets forth what the absentee ballot has to look like within pretty close arrangement parameters. But the Attorney General has opined, and the Secretary of State has concurred, that because of fear of going to the polls and getting sick is a disabling condition, that one of the reasons that you can have an absentee ballot, which is disability, is covered by that. So a large number of people who otherwise would not qualify under our law to file an absentee ballot are now qualified, namely anybody that doesn't want to go into a small space with a lot of people and have the danger of getting sick. So that being the case, we figure approximately, the Secretary says, 10% of the voters usually vote absentee. We figure it can be up to 50, 60, 70% if properly advertised and if made simple enough to do, which would then have two effects. It would put a tremendous burden on the absentee ballot processing situation. And also, it would lessen the number of people going to the polls in person, which would lessen the issue of safety and allow more social distancing.
Sure. So, Senator LeVake, I have to ask you, too, how do you feel about this recent change, as Brad describes it, made to absentee balloting rules? And how well do you think your constituents understand these changes, Senator LeVake?
Well, I think it's an important change. It gives us a certain level of comfort to know that we'll be able to go to the polls in September and November. Not sure if all of our constituents are aware of it. I don't think the education part has really been done. I know I'm trying to reach out to people and let them know that they can vote absentee, but also we are trying to pass a bill, which is House Bill 1672, that would actually codify no excuse absentee ballots. So that would put it into law. And that way it would prepare us for the next pandemic or flood, fire, whatever the reason is. We would not need an emergency order to allow people to vote absentee. So here's another bill that was proposed before the pandemic. And if we had it in place, this would have covered us for the absentee ballots.
Casey, how complicated is it to get an absentee ballot? I tried to do that in one of the last elections for my son who was away at college, and I got to say it was kind of complicated. So what's it like, the process, Casey?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and that's a key question right now that the committee and the others are trying to sort out. One of the things that has made the process somewhat more complicated is the notion that many city and town halls right now are closed to the public, as, you know, many businesses and other places that people typically would be going about their lives. So that's made it difficult, where a lot of town clerks and city clerks are operating by appointment only, or are limiting their hours out of, you know, valid public health concerns. There is, however, a provision within the state's absentee voting laws that allows someone to register by absentee methods. So you can request an absentee ballot, by requesting a form that someone could either, you know, that a clerk could mail or deliver to you. There's other methods of getting that. But that's one of the key things that has come up as well, is making sure that that process is first and foremost clear to people as an option that they may be able to use without physically presenting themselves at a town hall or a city hall. But then also clarifying, you know, what steps in the absentee process should people be aware of to make sure that their ballot is completed accurately. There have been concerns raised at the election this committee's meetings so far from local election officials, who point out that, you know, there are instances in some cases where voters, miss a step on the absentee ballot process. And when they're processing those ballots, you know, they make every effort to give those voters an opportunity to correct it. But there are instances where someone's vote is ultimately not counted because of an error on the absentee ballot. So trying to make sure that the rules and the procedures are communicated as clearly as possible sounds like a big priority for the officials that are working on this. I know that the Secretary of State's office has indicated that they do anticipate needing to do a lot more public education than they traditionally do around the voting process, in large part because of a need to make sure that everyone is clear on these rules as it pertains to these kind of extraordinary circumstances that we find ourselves under.
Wow. And if there are 50, 60, 70% of people using absentee ballots or wanting to use absentee ballots, as Brad said, it needs to be clarified for sure. Lots more questions, but I want to invite our listeners to join us as well. Today in The Exchange, again, we're looking at all the planning and preparation around this fall's elections, even with all the uncertainty concerning the coronavirus pandemic. We've been talking about election worker safety. We've been talking about the anticipated large increase in the use of absentee ballots, and also how a new committee plans to spend federal money aimed at helping states and localities cope with elections this fall. We'd love to hear your questions and concerns about voting. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And here's an email that came in from Zib in Concord, who is the ward supervisor of the checklist in her ward. Zib says, how will we ensure adequate trained workers at the polls in September and November? She says, 90% of my workers are over 60, which means a higher likelihood of pre-existing medical conditions. She also says, national elections always have higher turnout with people who are less informed about the voting process. And Zib finally says, registering to vote is limited now because of city and town clerks have few hours open. How can registration start soon and be a simple process? Zib, great to hear from you, especially given your role in your city. And I'd like to hear from everybody on this, but Senator LeVake, I think to you first. That second part of Zib's question I'd like to throw to you. Registering to vote is limited because clerks' offices are usually closed. How can registration be done in this under these conditions, Senator LeVake?
Well, at this point, what we have available to us is just requesting that registration form. And it's not easily available. It's not easily found or readily available. And you would have to go to your town clerk to get a copy of one, or to someone in the Secretary of State's office. So the process for registering is even more confusing, I would say, than for actually casting an absentee ballot. At this point, we don't have anything better than that. If we had the systems in place for online registering or automated voter registration for the DMV, we would at least have another avenue of registering to vote.
But
so this is an
that
area
right now,
that we're
yeah.
going to have to communicate very clearly and make it easy for people to find those request forms.
So let me make sure of it right, Senator Levake, and you correct me if I'm wrong. So if I had not registered to vote, I'd have to call my city or town office, request to get a copy. They would mail it to me. I'm guessing they can't send it to me. I fill it out. Do I return it in person? Walk down to the office and slip it through the slot, even though the office is closed? Do I send it back through the mail and cross my fingers that I've done it right? I mean, how does that work? It sounds like there's a lot of steps involved, Senator Levake.
Yeah, there are a lot of steps. And just to clarify, the first step is you are calling the town clerk for a request form. So you have to request an absentee ballot. You would send it into the town clerk, and then they send you a ballot. There is a way to track the progress of your ballot, which is important, and you could do that on the Secretary of State's website. But short of that, I would love to see something more automated for our voters.
Well,
it's
interesting.
A complicated process.
Yeah, and Zib also mentioned, and Casey, I'll turn to you because you've talked to so many local elections officials. Zib mentions the average age of those stalwart elections volunteers. They turn out every election and give their time. Many are right. Zib is right. Many are over 60 retirees who maybe have a little more time. What are you hearing from them, Casey, about their concerns about working at the polls this year?
Yeah, I think the workforce of New Hampshire's elections has been a longstanding concern, just having adequate numbers of people to handle all of the tasks that are asked of the supervisors of the checklist, the ballot clerks, the list goes on in a normal election. So when you add on top of that all of the kind of challenges that are logistical questions that exist due to coronavirus, there's additional concerns, in addition to the kind of, process concerns, there's also the public health concerns, because as you said, the people who make up the state's poll worker workforce tend to be largely older and those who are most at risk for complications due to COVID. That's been a conversation that's come up over and over and over again, not just in the context of this new election committee that the Secretary of State has convened, but also just in the conversations that I've had and that I've been hearing from election officials outside of that setting. So one thing that has come up is how do you protect the people that you do have? The state is looking at spending money, as was said before, on protective equipment, on cleaning supplies, things of that nature. But in addition, they're also looking at recruiting new and in many cases younger poll workers to the extent that that's going to be possible. There's been discussions even before all of this came forward about recruiting 17-year-olds to work at the polls or students to work at the polls, because there are certain jobs to run New Hampshire's elections that don't require you to actually be 18 years old. So
that's interesting.
I know some communities have found success in bringing in high school students to help them run their elections. And that's seen as kind of a way to also encourage civic engagement. Obviously, there are still concerns about the health and safety of people of all ages. So that's still something that I think people are trying to figure out how best to balance. But that's been one idea that's been put forward in all of this.
Well, Zib, thanks for writing in. And here's an email from Catherine in Durham. I'll throw this to you, Brad. Catherine says, can absentee ballots be automatically mailed to the entire voting population? I would think this would be the simplest way to make sure everyone has the opportunity to vote safely and without undue complications. Catherine says, shouldn't this be done everywhere in the country in anticipation of what could likely be unsafe conditions and future outbreaks? And Brad, what about that, if the state is anticipating a large number of people using absentee, how about anticipating that usage and just mailing everybody a ballot right now?
Well, if we could back up for just a second, because the question about registering by mail kind of got off the track and became a question of absentee ballots. So I just wanted to clarify that.
How do people register with offices closed?
Yeah, go ahead, Brad. Exactly right, that it's hard to find the form. One of the things our committee is talking about is getting the form online to register so people can print it and then send it in and get clear instructions for all these things, which is one of the most important things that we have identified, is making the process and the instructions for the process very clear. And so we're looking at that. The present registering by mail form requires a witness. If people are at home sequestered or whatever, maybe they don't have a witness. How are we going to do that? Can you use the remote notarization order from the governor to do that? So there are a lot of issues that we're trying to clarify to make that simple. On the question of mailing to everyone.
Sure, absentee ballots mailed to everyone, as our emailer says.
The problem with that is, there are several problems with that. One is the cost. The second is checklists would be the means by which you would do it. The estimate is checklists are up to 10 to 15% inaccurate because people move away, people die, people in the college towns graduate, all kinds of things. So that we've had several suggestions about mailing absentee ballot applications to everybody or sending a postcard to everybody telling them very simply how to do it. Or one of the members of the committee thinks that there ought to be a pile of absentee ballot applications at the entrance to every grocery store in the state because people are going to the grocery stores. But that's part of the publicity question. There's absentee ballot applications do not have to be on a state form. They have to be substantially in the form that the state form has. So people, political parties for a long time, can't send out absentee ballots, but they can send out the application form. So there are a lot of ways to get that application in front of people. But, you know, I think everybody's in agreement that letting everybody know how to do it and getting it in front of them would be critical. And that's one of our, I've just been making a list for tomorrow's meeting of the committee on all of the action items. And one of them is how much money do we have to have for publicity? One of the reasons we've been having every group we could think of come to the committee, and we've had many, 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 which has been very gratifying, but is a two-way street so that after we come up with whatever we come up with, every one of them can help publicize it.
Well, lots more questions after a short break, and thanks to those folks for writing in. Keep your emails coming in. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can give us a call, too, 1-800-892-6477. Coming up, more on election preparation in an uncertain climate. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, planning for this year's elections amid uncertainty about the coronavirus pandemic. Exchange listeners, let's hear from you. What questions do you have about voting this year? What are you worried about? What are you wondering about? What experiences have you had so far with voting? Email us. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. Once again, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are NHPR's Casey McDermott. She's done extensive coverage of our voting systems here in the state. Also with us, Brad Cook, chair of the state's Ballot Law Commission and chair of the new Select Committee on Emergency Election Support. And also with us, State Senator Melanie Levake of District 12 in the Southern Tier and chair of the Senate Election Law and Municipal Affairs Committee. And Senator Levake, Brad Cook mentioned before the break the important issue of publicity. There is a lot of uncertainty. Some changes have been made, but other changes, as you've described, have not been made. What's the best way to get the message out to voters, Senator Levake, about registering to vote, even though the town office is closed, getting that absentee ballot because you don't feel comfortable going to the polls? What's the best way to transmit this rather complicated message to the public?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think that there is one best way. You really have to use various avenues, whether it be you know, TV, radio, public access, going through your colleges, going through backpack mail. It just has to be multidimensional. Billboards, really, there has to be a lot of different ways that we reach out, because different people use different resources for their information.
And what are you hearing from constituents, Senator Levesque, about what they're most concerned or confused about in terms of all these issues we've talked about so far?
Well, I think that there's a high level of concern. There is concern with an emergency order, and when will that cease? In my mind, it makes sense to say that we are definitely going to have absentee ballots for anyone for the next election, and not have it be in limbo as to what if somebody changes that the month before or 2 months before. So, you know, that question, how do I get an absentee ballot? How will the polls be made safe? So all those questions are what we're hearing.
Casey, I'd love your thoughts, too, on how well the state thus far has been putting out this information. And I should say not just the state, but cities and towns, since, as you pointed out, it's municipalities that are really on the ground in terms of running elections.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. So the only formal guidance, as far as I know, that has been issued in writing came a few weeks ago from the Secretary of State's office and the Attorney General's office, that formally declared that anyone who had concerns about COVID, regardless of whether or not you were symptomatic or caring for someone, you know, would be eligible to cast an absentee ballot in the upcoming elections. That memo, while it outlined extensively the rationale for making that particular change, did not address many of these other questions that have since come up about the registration process, about the counting process, about many other aspects of what goes into running an election in New Hampshire. So local officials and to be candid, the press, you know, of which I'm a member in New Hampshire, has been asking the state for some more clarity on those questions. And we've not yet received a firm, you know, additional written guidance on that. In some cases, they've said, you know, it's coming, we're working on it. They've answered questions verbally in some of in these meetings that have been convened of the new election committee. But I think the, you know, the main theme that has come up for many people is the need to have something very clear, very consistent, and something that's in writing, so that everyone understands, you know, what the rules are for these circumstances. Right now, there are some instructions on the Secretary of State's website, but it's kind of hard to find them as it stands now. And, you know, on the call, we heard from people who, you know, have a vested interest in the state's elections, who conceded that they too found this process somewhat confusing and in need of greater clarity. So I think that's an indication that there is work to be done to you know, bring this and make this a little bit more clear for the public at large.
Well, we got a lot of questions from our listeners about absentee ballots, and everybody's feeling that there will be a lot more use of these in the upcoming elections. One caller who didn't want to stay on the line asked, how can we ensure anonymity for absentee ballots? That's a great question. And Brad, has your committee been looking at that?
Well, I don't think, you know, that's always been an issue of absentee ballots, which is one of the reasons that we have the somewhat complicated process we have with an outside envelope, an inside envelope, two signatures, all kinds of things. So absentee ballots, we haven't had that raised in the committee. We've had almost everything else raised in the committee. but in terms of the question of clarity, I couldn't agree more with the Senator and Casey. Everybody in the state of New Hampshire is not going to go to the Secretary of State's website. Once you get there, there is a fairly clear thing that entitled, how do you get an absentee ballot? But you got to be there to find it. We had 2 days last week when we had local election officials in front of the committee, town and city clerks one day and moderators and supervisors of the checklist the next day, and some of them don't know that it's possible to register by mail. So, you know, if they don't know it and they're the ones that administer it all the time, we haven't done a hugely successful job. One of the reasons for that to, in all candor, is that we in New Hampshire have something called same-day registration, which is really good when you don't have a pandemic going on, because
right.
if you're not registered and you haven't figured out how to do it, you just go to the polls on election day. If you don't have the requisite stuff, you sign an affidavit, you get a ballot, and you vote. Well, if you're not going to the polls, or if you're afraid to go to the polls, or if you shouldn't have a line of 30 people wanting to register at the polls because they're too close to each other, you're in a whole new ballgame.
Yeah, well, and I want to also mention, since you said, you know, you can get forms online and so forth, Brad, I just want to put out there that, you know, some people don't have internet access, or they don't understand, they need help. I'm thinking about my elderly parents. They do not have access to computers or internet, and I can't go into their facilities now and help them out with that. So, and the staff at both of their facilities is crazy busy, so they can't help them with that.
Well,
so,
we have the...
You know, if we're going to throw it all online, we're going to be disenfranchising certain people. Brad, I wonder what you think.
Well, I agree with you, first of all. That's one of the reasons why they put the piles of applications in different places, run them in the paper as an ad, do whatever you can do, but people don't read the paper is the problem. Put them online, put them as many different ways. I mean, Senator Levesque was exactly right. There's not just one answer. It's got to be all the answers. Traditionally, the Get Out the Vote effort not only was groups like the League of Women Voters, but it was the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. They want to win, so they want to register people that are sympathetic. Well, I assume they're going to continue to do that and get the word out. This afternoon, we're going to have, when you mention your elderly parents in a facility, we're going to have representatives of all kinds of healthcare organizations to talk to us about how they best can be served and what suggestions they have on making the process safe. So we're going everywhere we can with this
sure.
committee to try to figure out how to get the message out and what the needs are.
Well, here's two questions from listeners that I think are related. Charlotte says, if Vermont has a viable system, why don't we in New Hampshire just copy it? Why reinvent the wheel? Charlotte says, also automated registration sounds good. This is the 21st century, Charlotte says. And related to Charlotte, Angela writes, I lived in Oregon for 13 years where it is the norm to vote by mail. Paper ballots were received 2 weeks beforehand, I believe. It was due on election day. We also received a paper book with each candidate's photo, platform. Ballots could be mailed in or dropped off in person on election day, where volunteers collected them. I moved there long after this was in place, but Angela says it was seamless, another important use of the U.S. Postal Service, it seems to me. Do we not look to other states for ideas? Casey, to you first, is anybody right now talking about doing mail-in voting this year?
Well, there are people certainly that are talking about it. I think that, you know, Governor Sununu and the Secretary of State's office have been pretty emphatic about not wanting to move to an all-mail election. You know, even before this committee convened, we had Deputy Secretary of State Dave Scanlon on our air in mid-March when it became clear that COVID could be with us for a while, potentially disrupting the election process in some way. And, you know, we put that question to the Secretary of State's office, and they said that they don't believe that that's the right path for New Hampshire. That's been a position that they've consistently taken when, you know, similar proposals have come before the legislature over the years. And I think that the solution that has been that they've arrived at is essentially offering, you know, absentee voting. So not needing to physically present yourself at the polls if you don't feel comfortable. So I think that's the kind of middle ground where they're, you know, acknowledging that for many people, this is going to be a challenge and this is going to be, you know, a real risk to potentially show up and vote in person, depending on what the circumstances look like. So they've offered that option. But, you know, as we've been discussing this hour, that also comes with a lot of logistical concerns about implementing it. And I should say, too, that on that note, it's one thing to talk about moving to an all-mail election or moving to automatic voter registration. Keep in mind that the states that have moved in that direction have done so on a period of, you know, months, if not years. Right now, we're talking about, you know, a very limited and ever narrowing timeline between now and the September primary, let alone the November general. So I think that it's, you know, those proposals would still take considerable time to implement and to implement well. So that's one of the other things to keep in mind here, is that even the states that seem to have systems that work really well for them have implemented them on a much wider time frame than what we're working with.
Well, and Senator Levake, I want to ask you the same question, but first, read an email from Carl in Dover, who says, I fully support the idea of absentee voting to protect the public and improve access to the vote. But Carl says, how do we know who fills out the ballot? What are the measures taken? How do we ensure against things like people selling their vote? And Carl, thank you. So regarding absentee balloting and regarding the possibility of mail-in voting, Senator Levake, how would you answer concerns like Carl's?
Well, regarding our absentee ballot process now, you do have to work through the town clerk. You do have to show proof of who you are. So people don't just send in their ballots without being screened by somebody. Traditionally, the town clerk. When it comes to these modernized processes that we're talking about, and by the way, people have also asked why we haven't implemented them sooner. But when it comes to these processes, there are checks all along the way. So at the motor vehicle department, they check your ID or your birth certificate. So they know that you're a citizen and they have your address. It also gets checked by the supervisor of the checklist. So there are multiple checks in this process.
How do those checks take place remotely, Senator Levake? Seems like, you know, I remember going down to the city clerk in Concord and I walked in and I had a couple, you know, pieces of information that proved I was who I said I was. I had my driver's license, you know, easy peasy. How do you do that remotely?
It's going to have to be sending that information remotely.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Sending it via the mail.
Okay, Carl, thank you for writing in. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll hear from the town moderator in Conway, which had its local elections yesterday, and we'll take a lot more of your questions and comments. So keep them coming in. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org, and our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, how to prepare for elections with all the uncertainty right now over the pandemic. What questions or concerns do you have about voting this year? Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guest for the hour, NHPR's Casey McDermott, also Brad Cook, chair of the state's new Select Committee on Emergency Election Support, and State Senator Melanie Levake. She chairs the Senate Election Law and Municipal Affairs Committee. And with us now is Deborah Falver. She's the town moderator in Conway, which held its elections yesterday. Deborah, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Laura.
So Conway held its elections yesterday, as I said, to vote for town offices, lots of warrant articles. That's the normal part. The unusual part was you offered drive-through voting, Deborah. So what did that look like?
Well, it looked better than it sounds, actually. We have a huge town garage, and it has six bays. We only had three bays open, accepting vehicles, and it went really smoothly. We were surprised how well it went. We were lucky with the weather. The sun was out. It was a little cold. It was windy, so it was hard on the poll workers, but I think for the voters, it was a pretty smooth process. They drove in, got a ballot, went to the parking lot, completed their ballot, and then dropped it in the ballot box on their way out.
And I heard that of about 1,500 votes, about 500 were drive-through, about 900 were absentee. Wow, what does that say to you, Deborah?
Well, it says to me that people are really willing to use this absentee process. And we pushed it pretty hard with the radio and the newspaper and here in town to encourage people to try to use that process. We usually get only about 100 absentee ballots in this kind of election, and to have 900 tells me that people were concerned about coming out in this COVID time, and this was a good option for them.
Yeah, and 1,500 votes, that's a pretty good turnout for you, isn't that right?
Yes, that's kind of in the middle of our normal, and given the crazy times that we're in, I think it's wonderful that we were able to get that many voters out to address this important budget and candidate issues.
Well, and Deborah, we got an email earlier from Arthur, who did have some concerns. He voted yesterday. He says the signage was easy to follow. He voted in Senator Conway, he says. The person to greet me, though, he says, did not wear a mask or any other PPE. He was standing with three other people. Nobody was wearing PPE or standing 6 feet apart. And Arthur says it was a windy day. The person who took my ballot was in the process of putting on gloves. He did not have them on when he took my ballot, nor did he have a mask or a face shield. And Arthur says the one police officer I saw did not wear any PPE. So what do you say to those concerns that Arthur had that your workers weren't adequately protected?
Well, we did have our emergency preparedness officer get PPE for all the poll workers, and we offered it to all the poll workers. They could have chosen a shield, a mask, and gloves. And I left it to individual workers' discretion what they were going to wear. The people in the parking lot that were greeting, those are the town public works employees. That's a crew that works together on a regular basis, and they have had their own sort of quarantining and grouping process. So I suppose it would have looked better to the voters if they had been wearing masks, but I think the public works department had already felt as though they had covered those issues.
What did yesterday's experience indicate to you, Deborah, that you need to start thinking about for the fall? And congratulations for getting through this, by the way.
Yeah,
and,
thank you.
Here comes the September primary and the November general. What are you going to be thinking about, given what happened yesterday?
Well, so I think this drive-through voting thing, you know, it's almost a little bit of a lark. We were glad to be able to pull it off, and it's May, so it worked. In September, it may work as well because of the weather. There's no way in the world you could do this in April or March or November, when we typically have cold weather elections. So in terms of the primary, I'm very hopeful that the Secretary of State will come up with a absentee balloting, because I think that's important. I think people would like to do that. I think election officials like it, but right now the process was obviously set up for a pre-COVID world.
Yeah.
So any help we can get from the Secretary of State soon, you know, I would love to see those kinds of regulations in place June, July, because that's when we need to start advertising about an early September primary.
Right, and how to get those absentee ballots. How did having so many absentee ballots, Deborah, affect your ability to count?
Well, there's two processes there. When you get the ballots before the election, there's a whole lot of work right there. There's not enough staff at our town hall to manage all that, so we had a whole lot of volunteers helping out. And then on the election day, we had to have more poll workers processing the ballots, because you can't just start it right at the very beginning of the day. You need to wait a little while in case somebody shows up and says, hey, I want my absentee ballot back. I'd like to vote in person. So there's a lot of very clear rules about how the process has to happen, and it does make for a lot of extra work for the poll workers on the day.
And I want to ask you, Deborah, about poll workers. We talked about this earlier with our other guests. As you know, many of whom are retirees, dedicated volunteers. But as you know, this population is the most vulnerable to coronavirus. So how are your volunteers feeling about their work yesterday and then their work coming up?
I was really pleased. I personally made the phone calls to the poll workers a month ago to find out who was willing to work. And I anticipated that a lot of people would say, no, not this time. And a few people did. But an awful lot of my poll workers said, yeah, I think this is a great idea. I'd love to come and be part of it. So I was very encouraged that the poll worker group, which is a very committed group of people who believe in democracy, really wanted to be part of this process.
Well, Deborah, stay with us for a moment, if you could, please. I want to bring in our other guests. And Brad Cook, to you first, your thoughts on what happened in Conway yesterday and how it might relate to the work you're doing on the committee.
I think Deborah's a very good moderator, first of all. Secondly, if they had that many absentee ballots in this election, there is a quantitative difference in a presidential general election to a town election and to a primary. And when we get to November, it's a different ballgame. I think she's right that the drive-through is kind of a lark. As I mentioned before, it doesn't seem to be provided for primaries and general elections in our statutes. She has much more flexibility in a town election, but I think it's indicative of the fact that properly done, the word can get out on how to do absentee ballots, and absentee ballots can take the pressure off the in-person voting situation. You know, this November we have a presidential election, and somebody asked me after I got this committee chairmanship why it was important, and I said basically it's important because we got to get this right, because literally, without being too dramatic, the future of the world could depend on it. Because if we have a situation that depresses the vote and keeps people from coming out, we could have a totally unrepresentative election, regardless of which way it goes. And that could be startling. So this is
well,
very
and there were already
stuff.
Concerns, Brad, about you know, Russian hacking or Chinese hacking and election security. So there were already concerns about the elections even before this came up. So just to clarify, Brad, state law says cities and towns for their own elections can do drive-through voting, but for state elections, meaning primaries and generals, you can't do that.
The state statute is. I am mystified. A couple of weeks ago, I read all of the state statutes on how to conduct an election, and the amount of detail in our statutes about how many square feet you need for this, and how much space you need for that, and all these other things for a state or a general election is startling, and it doesn't provide any place for drive-through voting. When it comes to town meetings with votes, and cities don't have them, obviously, the flexibility that the moderator has and the election official has is much broader.
Yeah. Well, and
if I could just jump sure. in there. So in addition to being a moderator, I'm a lawyer, and I'm sorry, I have to apologize in advance to, you know, maybe looking at this a little too carefully, but Brad's exactly right. The law doesn't provide for drive-through, but it doesn't ban it either. And if September 8th arrives and I don't have a building big enough to host a traditional election, then I do think it's within a moderator's discretion to do whatever needs to be done, including potentially a drive-through election to meet the spirit of this election law.
Because you need to do social distancing, perhaps, Deborah,
right.
And if turnout is large and you don't have a building large enough, you'd like those other options. That seems to be what you're saying.
Right. You know, Conway is still a small town in terms of the number of people and in terms of the buildings that we have available. And I do have a big space available for the November presidential election. And I think I can do social distancing then. But I don't have a big enough space available in September. So I may need to be looking very seriously at a drive-through election.
Wow. Well, Deborah, hold on one moment, because we also have State Senator Melanie Levesque with us, chair of the Senate Election Law Committee. So, Senator Levesque, what comes up for you hearing about Deborah's experience yesterday and also hearing about her concerns at the town level coming up for the fall?
Well, first of all, I applaud the town of Conway and Deborah for pulling off that election. I think it's important that we think outside of the box, and you certainly have done that and showed that it can work. I do hold some of the concerns for our elections in September and November, but I don't think that we should rule it out. I think we need to explore it more and understand how we could make it work. And if the change needs to be made in legislation, that could be done. We'll be getting back together in June, from what I understand. So that could be done, but it's also interesting that Deborah said that it doesn't say you can't.
Deborah, last question for you. What's your message for the state, for lawmakers, for the governor, for the Secretary of State's office, to make it easier for local elections officials like you, again, with these big elections coming up in the fall?
I think to take some guidance, the New Hampshire Municipal Association is doing a wonderful job of kind of moderating a debate amongst moderators about these issues, and they've offered the state some very clear guidance, and I think it'd be wonderful if the legislatures could take a careful look at that and just remember that so many of our election laws were based on voting in little old beautiful white clapboard town halls, and that's not where we are anymore. So whatever they can do to help us streamline the process would be wonderful.
All right. Deborah, thank you very much for being with us, especially the day after your big election there in Conway. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That's Deborah Fauver. Again, she's town moderator in Conway. And Brad, real quick to you, what is next for this Committee on Emergency Election Support? When's your next meeting? What are you going to be talking about?
Well, our next meeting is at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Remote, all on Zoom, right?
All on Zoom. The link is at the Secretary of State's website for the junkies that want to participate. and we've had up to 340 people at one time in these, especially when we had the town clerks. Today we talked to healthcare people, as I mentioned, and we talked to business leaders and labor unions. Tomorrow we have a work session to start getting down to sorting all this out. Next week we're going to talk about the providing PPE equipment and talking to college and high school officials, and then have another work session and a public session. But we, as I mentioned before, we hope to be done with some concrete, firm recommendations by at least the middle of June, at the very latest, I hope, by the end of May.
Well, Brad, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Brad Cook, chair of the state's Ballot Law Commission and the new Select Committee on Emergency Election Support. Senator LeVake, very quickly, as a key lawmaker on this issue, what's next for you?
Well, next is getting back into session and executing the bills that we have, prioritizing the bills coming up, and getting some passed and signed by the governor, I hope.
Well, it's been good to talk to you. Thank you very much for being with us, Senator LeVake.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's State Senator Melanie LeVake. She chairs the Senate Election Law and Municipal Affairs Committee. Casey McDermott, what can we look forward from you in terms of coverage of these voting debates?
Well, we will continue to follow the committee as well as to monitor, you know, how the funding that they've received, that $3 million and perhaps more, is being distributed to local communities, because that's a big concern, is how do you pay for all of these changes?
Well, I'm guessing you'll be one of those people on that giant Zoom call that Brad mentioned this afternoon. Casey, thank you very much for being with us. We sure appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That's NHPR's Casey McDermott. Again, she's been providing extensive coverage for us on NHPR about New Hampshire's voting systems. Thanks for being with us today. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.